There's a trivia question going around. When was the last time we had this meeting? And from Daryl, he believes it was before the Giants won either of their World Series. So that's at least the one that's out there. So it has not been confirmed yet, but we'll go with that. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm John Risto with the Santa Clara Valley Transportation Authority, and this is the Bay Area Partnership meeting. And I think if we're ready to get going, I'm going to get started with introductions. And on my left.
Good afternoon. I'm Ken Kirky, Planning Director with MTC.
Medium Chion, Association of Bay Area Government.
Carolyn Clevenger, MTC.
Suzanne Smith, Sonoma County Transportation Authority.
David Rapinski with the Marin County Transit District.
I'm not Larry.
Larry Patterson, City of San Mateo.
Susan Clausen, County of Sonoma.
Nina Reynolds, Bay Area Water Emergency Transportation Authority.
Michael Burns, Santa Clara VTA.
Ed Riskin, San Francisco MTA.
Maria Lombardo, SF County Transportation Authority.
Paul Matsuoka, Livermore Amateur Valley Transit.
Grace Krenikin, BART.
Kate Miller, Napa County Transportation and Planning Agency.
Sandy Wong, San Mateo CCAG.
Martin Engelman, Contra Costa Transportation Authority. I'm here on behalf of Randy Iwasaki, who's on vacation.
April Chan with San Mateo County Transit District, sitting in for Michael Scanlon.
Good afternoon. My name is Art Dow with the Alameda County Transportation Commission.
Daryl Halls with Solano Transportation Authority.
Ezra Rapport, ABAC.
Steve Heminger with MTC.
And then in the back. Elliot.
Brad Paul, ABAC.
Janice Bowman, Sonoma County Transportation Authority.
Liz Bryson, San Francisco Transportation Authority.
Scott Haywood, VTA.
Is that it? Okay, great. I think we're going to be talking about Plan Bay Area, so we might as well move to the number two. And Steve, would you like to lead us off?
Sure. And I don't know. It may just be the last time this group met. We talked about the last plan. I'm not sure. I do know that at that time, Ken Kirky was working for Ezra, not me. So quite a few things have changed. We do have quite a bit of ground to cover. I'm afraid that for most of you, it will be somewhat stale ground because you've been hearing a lot from us over the last few months in board presentations and public hearings and press accounts. But we wanted to make sure that we did convene this group formally to give you a crack at Plan Bay Area and its associated environmental impact report. So I guess I will turn to you, Ken, and your colleagues to make the presentation.
And I will turn to Miriam, who's going to kick things off.
So what we're going to try to do is touch on the key highlights for those of you who have not seen this presentation at least three or four times, which I think is the majority. But we'll touch again on some of the key components to ensure that we can have your input and an appropriate discussion. This is a picture of what are some of the key tasks, and I'm going to highlight the fourth item, which is embody local visions. That has been central to the plan. It's built upon input from local jurisdictions on expected growth on local plans, and towards that, we're connecting a healthy economy, the expectations, the requirements of retaining some of our economic competitiveness, the preservation of our natural environment, and being able to carry the quality of life that we enjoy today into future generations. Next, please. This is to give you a picture of all the analysis that have gone into this plan. It was not just compiling a few pieces of projection, but it was ensuring that we address the economic challenge, the environmental challenges, and the equity challenges. This is a picture of how long we've been working with you on this task. A couple of years. We started with alternative visions. We moved through the selection of the preferred alternative, and we started with environmental review last year. So today what we're presenting to you is the draft plan and environmental review. At the core of this strategy, the connection of transportation and land use. So we released the jobs housing connection strategy and the transportation investment strategy last year, and in 2 months ago, we brought those pieces together into the document that you have in front of you. Just a key components of the growth trends, we're trying to flag for you what are some of the expectations in terms of our population and our economy and how that informs our strategy. This is the overarching regional growth. 1 million jobs, 2 million people, 600,000 units. That's overall the expectation for the next 30 years. In terms of the employment trends, I mean, no big news in terms of the competitiveness of the Bay Area on knowledge-based activities. Those expectations remain in place, and while we would not see the level of growth that we might have seen in prior decades, meaning the strong growth or the sharp recent decline, the Bay Area will continue to perform better than the country in terms of employment growth and in terms of resources. But that's not the whole picture. The strength of the Bay Area really lies in the connection between the knowledge base, the high-tech sector, with some of the services activities that support the knowledge base sector. The location of our employment is moving towards urban centers. Our office parks will continue to retain their vitality, their economic vitality, but as you have seen already, San Francisco and some of the cities along transit corridors are absorbing some of the key high-tech employers. In terms of population, we're getting more diverse, so Latino and Asian groups will grow, will add more people than some of the white population. And we're aging. Over the next 30 years, two-thirds of our population growth will be in the senior group, and that really, again, informs some of the challenges we need to address. We're building more multifamily housing. As we are well aware, the Bay Area has a majority of single-family homes and will continue to build those, but for the first time in a long, long time, the share of multifamily housing has increased and it's more than half of what we produce in the last decade. So the growth strategy, meaning how we're addressing those challenges over the next 30 years. You're very familiar with the priority development areas, which are locally designated, are locally nominated, are approved by local councils. That constitutes the core of our effort. That is parallel to the priority conservation areas, which attempt to retain the quality of our open space, our farms, and special habitats. And this is the picture of how those pieces come together. You see the green areas, that's our open space. And the proposed growth is contained within the gray areas, which is the urbanized land. So contrary to prior decades where we were expanding and extending our urbanized land, for the next 30 years, the proposal is that we contain our growth within the urbanized land. But not only that, as you can see, the proposal is to have a much more focused growth within the priority development areas. That's less than 5% of the region's land, where we think we can accommodate about 80% of the new homes and over 60% of the new jobs. The story, so, is not just the retention of open space and farmlands, but is the retention of many neighborhoods that are choosing to retain the scale, the low-density scale, the single-family neighborhoods, and take advantage of those places that have been identified at the local level with solid infrastructure, with transit capacity to accommodate future housing, future population, and future jobs. Now, As I indicated, there are about 170 priority development areas, and they range widely. So a priority development area is downtown San Francisco, downtown San Jose. Downtown Cloverdale is also a priority development area, and we have many small-scale neighborhoods that are served by transit that are not expected to accommodate a lot of growth, but are expected to perform within the local visions that have been proposed and supported by some level of transit. And with this picture, I'll transfer to Ken to continue the presentation.
Thanks, Miriam. So I'm going to just walk us through the investment portion of the draft plan. So it's a long-range plan. It's a big region. It's a big number, $289 billion going forward. As you all know, I think the bulk of this funding comes from within the region. More than half is from local sources, largely county sales tax measures as well as transit fares. Roughly 15% is regional, bridge tolls. And then a smaller percentage is coming from the state and federal government. This plan continues MTC's long-standing policy of fix it first, particularly in a region where most of the growth is going to be in infill areas within existing communities. We think this makes sense, that maintaining the existing system is important, and 80% of the funds in the plan are in the committed category. Among the committed revenue, 60% is to maintaining the existing transit system. 30% is for maintaining roads and bridges, and 5% is for a road and bridge expansion, 5% for transit expansion. These projects are essentially big projects under construction right now. BART to Warm Springs, eBART, SMART, the Oakland Airport Connector, that big bridge not too far from here that's being put together, as well as the fourth bore on the Caldecott Tunnel. Among the discretionary investments, the big categories include another amount of funding that goes toward maintaining the existing system. This is in large part because, despite the fact that the lion's share of the funding in the plan is committed, we're still having difficulty keeping up in this region with maintaining our existing system. In terms of roads as well as transit, we have huge needs. We have an aging transit fleet. We have aging infrastructure. We're a relatively mature region relative to the rest of California, so we put a fair bit of money there. I think you've all heard about the One Bay Area Grant Program. This is a partnership with congestion management agencies and local jurisdictions to take what were a bunch of smaller programs in the last plan, put them into one large program with some specific criteria related to housing, related to complete streets, and putting that money out to the counties for distribution across the counties. And then lastly, the last big portion of this funding are your priorities, the county investment priorities. So total transportation investments, you can see that 55% go toward maintaining the existing transit system, a third toward maintaining roads and bridges, and then the balance to expansion and some strategic projects that are moving forward. This is very much a performance-based plan. At the beginning of the process, the policymakers at MTC and ABAC set out some very aggressive performance targets, and those were carried over to the transportation projects. You can see the list here of the highest performing transportation projects, and if you look down the list, you'll see that they align pretty closely with the land use pattern that Miriam just described. These are largely infill projects, projects that provide more capacity within our existing system. The number one project is the BART Metro program that would provide more capacity in the core of the system, where a substantial amount of growth will be occurring based upon the plan. Looking at investment in transit operations, across the larger systems as well as the small operators grouped together at the top, they are largely funded through committed revenue. There's a bit of discretionary revenue that is added for some of them as well. When we compare ourselves to the other large metropolitan planning organizations in the state, you'll see that the Bay Area is much more focused on committed projects toward maintaining our existing system, We're also heavily funding transit in comparison to the other regions. This is in part just the makeup of our region. We're an older region, relatively speaking. We have an older transit network, and we're actually growing somewhat more slowly than some of the other regions over this time period. This slide essentially shows that while we're putting a lot of money, both committed and discretionary, into our transit systems, we still have a lot of remaining need that's not being met. This is one of the challenges for this plan, and this will be one of the challenges as we move forward to update it in the relatively near future. It's a somewhat similar picture for local streets and roads. You can see, again, although we're putting most of our money back into the existing system and then putting discretionary money on top of that, we still have a remaining need to achieve the optimal state of repair. This slide just looks at the One Barrier Grant Program. The pie chart shows the funding distribution formula. It's 50% population. It also includes looking at housing production in terms of both low-income units and units generally, and then the regional housing need allocation in terms of the overall allocation across jurisdictions within a county, and the same for low-income housing units, that allocation. That informed the county distributions that you see on the right-hand side of this slide. You can see that more urban counties are receiving more funding than the smaller counties, the more rural North Bay counties. And there's also a requirement on the other end that the funding for the more urban counties, the five Central and South Bay counties, that 70% of the funds go into or adjacent to priority development areas. In the North Bay, that's 50% that is required to go to those areas. This slide looks at the next phase of the New Start, Small Starts projects. Again, you can see projects that are being funded in areas that are taking on a lot of the growth in this plan, including BART to Silicon Valley and the Caltrain corridor, the blended Caltrain high-speed rail corridor, which will be electrified. A substantial amount of money going into these areas that are taking on a lot of the growth in the plan. The Freeway Performance Initiative was a big part of the last plan. It moves forward in this plan, and you can see it's really trying to make use of the freeway system we have now through technology, through clearing the freeway lanes as quickly as we can, through arterial management, ramp metering, things of that sort, through 511 and travel information so that people are using the system as well as possible. The Transit Performance Initiative builds upon that. It's a similar approach. It's really related to funding high-performing projects that perform well. The Regional Express Lane Network was also a big part of the last plan. That's proposed to continue forward in the draft plan. And we're taking sort of a first real look at congestion pricing in this region through some of the initiatives in San Francisco on Treasure Island and related to downtown San Francisco. Here are the county's funding priorities. Again, you see the mix of a lot of money, the majority going toward maintaining existing systems, whether it's transit or roads and bridges, a bit more to road and bridge expansion, and then a more modest amount to transit expansion. This slide, titled Climate Program Initiatives, I think is a little bit deceiving given that so much of the plan's focus is on climate. It's the statutory target that in part drives where growth occurs and what we fund. But these program initiatives are specific policy initiatives that we're including in the plan to jumpstart some of these areas that we think are important for reducing greenhouse gas emissions related to how much folks drive. There are also things that we can take credit for in the legislation, and they are part of the greenhouse gas calculations in terms of how we get to reducing the greenhouse gas per capita for the region, for our target. And with that, I'll turn it over to Carolyn, who's going to give you an overview on the draft environmental impact report.
All right. Well, Ken and Miriam just spent a lot of time going through the proposed plan, so I'm just going to give you some of the highlights from the environmental impact report that's been prepared for the plan. As you all know, environmental impact reports are prepared primarily to analyze and disclose the potential environmental impacts of the implementation of the plan. This is a programmatic EIR, so it's a little bit different than the plan-specific EIRs people are more accustomed to seeing, and then it deals with all the projects in the plan and all of the land use changes in the plan. We evaluate a range of reasonable alternatives, and the information is meant to inform decision makers and the public about the potential environmental impacts. So the next slide outlines the alternatives in greater detail. The no project, as required by CEQA, includes existing 2010 land uses as well as what was called the committed transportation network for this plan. So that is primarily projects that are already in construction, fully locally funded, or already far enough along their environmental review process where they were deemed committed by the commission. The transit priority focus alternative included higher densities near high-quality transit. It also included a reduced regional express lanes network, a development fee that was linked to areas based on vehicle miles traveled, and higher peak period Bay Bridge tolls, which you'll see across the next three alternatives I'll review. And that alternative, those funds were used, as well as some additional funds to provide funding for additional BART and AC transit investments. And the alternative called the Enhanced Network of Communities, that alternative was developed in consultation with the business stakeholders. That alternative included a higher population total than the proposed plan. It also included a more dispersed land use pattern based more on previous rounds of projections developed by ABAG. The transportation investment was similar to the proposed plan. However, it did include an additional peak period Bay Bridge toll, which was used in that alternative to fund additional maintenance of the state highway system. The Environment, Equity, and Jobs, or EEJ, alternative was developed based on input from the equity and environmental stakeholders. That alternative emphasized increasing opportunities for low-income housing in job-rich communities through some changes in the land use assumptions. It excluded any uncommitted roadway project from the plan, and it also included a VMT tax, the revenues from that tax, as well as the higher peak period Bay Bridge toll, and that alternative were used to fund additional transit throughout the region. The stakeholders gave a specific percents of that additional revenue that would go to different operators. It went to the majority of bus operators, except for Muni. So that is one of the differences in that alternative. In terms of how the alternatives performed, as we took the plan through the development process, many of you have probably seen some of these targets. There were 10 performance targets that were used. So I'm just going to walk through how the alternatives did compare to those performance targets. The EEJ alternative did do the best overall environmentally in terms of impacts to the region. The first and second target are both statutorily required by SB 375. So you see the first target is the greenhouse gas emission reductions that are required by SB 375. All of the alternatives other than the no project meet the GHG reduction requirements. The second alternative, to house the region's population at all income levels, all alternatives meet. In terms of some of the other alternatives, I'll just focus on a few to not walk through all of them. Target 3A, which focuses on PM 2.5, you see that all of the alternatives did roughly the same other than Alternative 4, which had a lower reduction. That Alternative 4 was the most highway-centric of the alternatives, but you do see across many of the other alternatives the differences were very minor, be a percent to 2% difference. For Alternative 3C, achieve greater reductions in heavily impacted areas. The heavily impacted areas were defined as our communities of concern that we used for most of our MTC analysis. And you see that all of the alternatives, again, other than the enhanced network of communities, show a less impact on those communities of concern. In terms of target number 4, we had a performance target of reaching a 50% reduction in injuries and fatalities from collisions. We actually go in the wrong direction on this target. That target was not made per capita, and when you add 2 million more people to the region, you're going to have more accidents. In terms of the active transport, our target number 5, to increase average walking and biking by 70%, we fell far short of that across all the alternatives. Alternative 5, the EEJ alternative, does perform the best in that target, but we fall well short in all areas. In terms of the next targets, Alternative 6 looked at focusing growth within the existing urban footprint. You see that all of the alternatives included that as a policy assumption going in, other than the no project, that they had to house all the population within the urban footprint. So those by de facto met the target. You do see with a no project, essentially, if we, the region continued growing as we've grown over the past couple of decades, that only 53% of the growth could be accommodated within the existing urban footprint. So that's sort of a good comparison of past trends compared to where we're trying to go in the future. In terms of the non-auto mode share, 9A, you see that the EEJ does perform the best, just 1%, though, better than the proposed plan or the transit priority alternative. So in a lot of the VMT and mode share targets, the alternatives all perform, you know, pretty close to each other. The three targets under number 10 are all based on state of good repair analysis. You do see that for 10B, the state of decreased share of distressed lane miles of state highways, you see a much better performance for all the enhanced network of communities alternative, and that is because they assume that a peak period Bay Bridge toll goes to maintain the state highway system. So that's the difference in that alternative. You see a small difference in 10A in terms of local road PCI, because in the EEJ alternative, they do assume putting some, taking some funds and putting them towards local streets and roads. The next slide is probably easier to read in your packet than up on the screens. This is the equity analysis. This was done for the past three rounds of scenario development that were done in developing the plan. Most of the results here mirror results that we've seen to date, namely that the cost of housing and transportation in the region is expected to go up. It's expected to go up with the proposed plan and with any of the alternatives that we looked at. You do see that the item here that's gotten the most discussion to date has been the potential for displacement, and you do see that the proposed plan has the highest risk for displacement, and this is an analysis that looked at risk of displacement. It didn't take into account local policies that discourage displacement, and it is somewhat logical. The more you focus growth in certain areas that are existing communities, which are what the PDAs are based around, you're going to have potential risks for displacement. The EEJ alternative lowers displacement pressure by spreading some of the development to what they call these communities of opportunity, a little bit more dispersed throughout the region. The travel times didn't reveal any big differences across the alternatives, so that is one of the targets we'd like to improve upon for the next plan to make it a little more of a meaningful analysis.
Thanks, Carolyn. And with that, you get to listen to me one more time. I'll speak briefly. This is just moving forward.
Again, are we on B2A? Are we on 2A or 2B?
We are on 2B.
Can we stop for a second
at 2A
and see if anybody
sees
their chunks?
Why don't we stop after 2A and see if there's any comments or questions on that section? You may be able to go. It doesn't look like that, so why don't we proceed 2B?
That's what happens when most of the audience could give the presentation with their eyes closed at this point, which I fear will be true for this section as well, but it won't stop me. So the plan is going to be updated, as you all know, before we know it. In the meantime, we've been learning a bit along the way in terms of things that we need to do to keep the plan moving forward and have the plan have an impact on the region. One of the things we've heard about, I think in part because we started out working on this plan with you in the middle of a pretty bad recession, is that we really need to work on how the plan supports a strong economy for the region. One of the things that MTC and ABAG will be doing moving forward is working with local jurisdictions to really try to make the plan's development pattern happen. And that'll be supporting jurisdictions that improve efficiencies at the local level, supporting local jurisdictions with planning grants, with technical assistance, funding for programmatic EIRs, and so forth. A few years back, MTC and ABAG received funding for something called the Bay Area Prosperity Plan, funding from HUD, about $5 million. It includes a couple million dollars that is going out for funding to support expanding economic opportunities for low and moderate income households and individuals. It also provides funding for specifically trying to improve the economy, essentially for low and moderate income workers, and doing so by connecting affordable housing with transit and workforce opportunities. Moving forward to updating the next plan, there are a couple of key areas that will involve, at the regional level, our partner agencies, the Air District and BCDC. with the Air District, we'll continue to work on promoting healthy infill development, which is essentially picking up around the issue of what were once CEQA guidelines and really trying to look at how to make public health concerns related to infill development in areas where there are potential impacts from pollution to address the public health impacts without creating impediments that stop good development from happening in those locations. Climate adaptation and sea level rise is actually something we've been hearing a lot about in our public hearings, that despite the fact that there's a lot of detail in the DEIR about that issue, it is something that a lot of folks in the region are raising. And so it's something we'll be working together with our regional partners and local jurisdictions on as we move forward to the next plan. And we've done a lot of work in the region on the transportation side in terms of preparing the region for the seismic risk that is a fact of life here, hardening our bridges, strengthening the tunnels, and so forth. There's a lot of vulnerability, though, on the housing side and the land use side, including some of the key areas taking on growth in this plan. So that's an initiative that ABAG has had and will be seeking to advance moving forward. In terms of a legislative platform, MTC and ABAG are working together on advancing some key legislation. One of the things that happened during the course of developing this plan is that one of the most important tools for implementing development in infill locations, particularly in weaker market communities, was eliminated, and that was redevelopment. We think that something akin to redevelopment needs to be replaced. It's going to be important, particularly in communities that are somewhat more challenged in terms of the market, to incentivize development. CEQA is something that's in the news a lot these days, and we think there's going to be a lot of discussion about CEQA over the next few years. CEQA has many benefits, provides many benefits, it's provided a lot of environmental benefits to California, but we know that there are projects, the types of projects that are necessary for this plan to be implemented that have been held up again and again because of the way CEQA is structured, and so we think that's something that needs to be improved upon. On the transportation side, all of you, some of you in particular, are painfully aware of what a two-third voter threshold does for voter initiatives and trying to attain the necessary support for a sales tax measure, and that's something we think should change. If it can go down to 50, that would be great. If it could go down to 55% requirement, that would be a big step in the right direction. And we'll continue to work on behalf of the region to seek more funding at the federal and state levels related to transportation funding. So, moving forward, the comment period is slated to close on May 16th for both the draft plan and the draft EIR. We're going to be bringing back summary comments to our a joint meeting of the MTC Planning Committee and the ABAG Administrative Committee in early June, and likely some initial policy identification of some of the issues that have been identified through the process that the public, the stakeholders, and local jurisdictions are saying we should be taking a look at as we move toward adoption of the final plan in EIR in July. And with that, we'll try to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Now is your chance.
So I had a question.
Yeah, go
ahead. The platform for advocacy, is that to get to a level where we can achieve this plan, or is it to address the gaps that the plan exposes, such as the state of good repair needs for streets and transit, the displacement, and some of the other areas of the plan that seemed unaddressed by the plan?
I'll take a crack at this, and then some gentlemen to my right may want to chime in. I mean, it's very much about implementing the plan. The two pieces that you identified, those two components are certainly related. Around the funding component, I think the gap is so wide at this point in time, and the picture in Sacramento and D.C. is so gloomy. I think we're going to try to push that as far as we possibly can, recognizing the current context. I don't know, Steve, if you want to add anything.
Well, I think, Ed, it's probably a little bit of both. I don't think we're very optimistic about a white horse riding out of Sacramento or Washington. So I think our principal legislative priority in both places is to empower ourselves to do more self-help. And in Sacramento, I think that's largely the voting standard. In terms of the land use side, though, I mean, the loss of redevelopment is an enormous obstacle in meeting this plan. And I think some of the debate you're going to hear, especially from the Building Industry Association in the coming months, is that maybe our plan's too ambitious as a result, that maybe we can't quite pull off so much densification in these PDAs. Now, we've done a nice little bit of research, actually, that they asked us to do that explored the feasibility of these PDAs, and it found that quite a few of them are sort of market-ready now, but quite a few more would be if we had some kind of replacement for redevelopment. So that's a clear indication of a place where we need some legislative change to make the plan happen, not just address a gap that the plan illuminates. So that's my sense of going forward what we need. I think one of the places where this region has not done well is trying to continue momentum. I mean, it's been a pretty low energy presentation so far because I think we're all sort of worn out with this thing. And what I worry about is we'll adopt it and say, and put it on the shelf. And that's why we don't make a lot of progress around here sometimes, is we let momentum move away, and then we get back to the subject in 4 years. So we are hoping to do that differently.
Is the main obstacle that the loss of redevelopment brings, is it the tax increment financing, or are there other tools of redevelopment that
let's get this guy in.
Problematic?
Certainly land assembly is just as important as the tax increment financing. We don't have the appropriate parcel sizes in our infill development to get us the type of volume of units that we need for affordable housing inclusionary zoning. So that type of power, along with some form of tax increment support, are equally important.
Grace?
What kind of work did you do? I'm one that couldn't have given the presentation. I'm still learning here. What type of work did you do to look at the linkages to the other regions? At BART, we've got a lot of pressure on us, the BART Metro that you talk about and some of the investments, the infrastructure inside, but I also have a lot of pressure built to Livermore, not to meet the Livermore needs, but the volume of riders actually come from Tracy on some of the projections. Take the eBART out further, you know, can we go to Sacramento that way? Just kidding, but, you know, could we go to Brentwood and on? And who's doing the planning on the edges with the other counties on the edges? And what kind of planning is there to give us some guidance as to where we should be making some of our investments?
We have looked at, particularly from a modeling standpoint, what the other regions around are doing and what they're forecasting and so forth. But I think, quite honestly, what you're describing is something we really need to do as one of the movements towards the update of the plan. I mean, SB 375 calls upon regions to grow within their boundaries. And if you look at the legislation and you look at the way the different MPO regions are established across the state, that's more of an issue for us than any of the other regions, in part because of our kind of history of growth spilling over into surrounding regions for reasons of affordability and so forth. I think we need to, and we're planning on working more closely with the other surrounding MPOs, particularly San Joaquin COG, as we move forward toward updating the next plan.
I think it's an excellent point and a deficiency because we haven't really addressed it in the plan, but we get a chance to re-propose that in the plan for July. So I'm hoping that we can make a recommendation that that's on the to-do list.
Suzanne?
Looking at the target analysis, the Ten Commandments that kind of got expanded with the A, Bs, and Cs, it's not news, I guess, since we've seen this before, but it's striking that the three out of the four areas where we're completely going in the wrong direction are transportation, which, you know, it used to be a transportation plan. What
could have been done differently to get those numbers to change?
Oh, you know, I'm not sure. Look, in case of one, I think Carolyn mentioned it. We didn't have a per capita standard, and we should have. So we just goofed, and I hope we can change it. I think some of them might have been too aggressive. And one lesson I've learned here, you know, we've been gun-shy about standards in this region for a long time because we spent a bunch of money in court defending one that we stumbled into. And it's taken us a while to, I think, be willing to be a little bit more starry-eyed, I'll call it. And I think in this case, you've got some starry-eyed goals here that aren't necessarily bad, but it's going to take us a lot of change, a lot of societal change, in my opinion, to achieve some of them. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad result if we come up way short. The fact that we achieved so many of them, I think, is likely to mean that the advocates will think they screwed up and they'll dream up, you know, 20 more that we can be far away from so they can bang on us about it. I think the most problematic thing for me about the targets is that you can't distinguish the alternatives among them. And that has always been frustrating to people. Some of you, I don't know if you remember Sunny McPeak, who used to be the agency secretary. She had a phrase for it, the tyranny of the large denominator. And that's what we've got. We've just got so much stuff out there already that what we're adding incrementally in this plan, you just can't see. So I think what we're looking forward to and what you should look forward to is a debate with our boards before we adopt the plan, not so much about these results, but about the inputs that lead to these results. For example, what do you think about a VMT tax? Is that a good idea or a bad one? You know, what do you think about building a couple hundred thousand more housing units than we're planning on? Good idea or a bad one? What about a higher Bay Bridge peak toll? What about chopping off a bunch of express lanes because we don't like them? I think, you know, it's sort of ironic that we've spent so much of our time focusing our boards on outcomes, and now we've given them a bunch of highly similar outcomes, and they don't know what to do. So I think we're going to spend more time talking about inputs and what they think of them as policy ideas as a way to get to the goal line.
Anyone else? Art.
Steve and Ezra, thanks very much for holding this forum, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for leading this effort. Just on the work in progress, Steve, vibrant economy and cleaning our air, I want to see if we can add a bullet or two on there. You've done pretty good job in the past, at least MTC in the past, in coming up with a comprehensive strategic goods movement strategy in the past several years. And I'm suggesting that moving forward as part of the work in progress, that we are keep our focus on that. I think, and in the past we've done our studies really to rally around the TCIF program and the precursor of MAP 21. But I think moving forward, we ought to just have one, a standalone one, just in case that other future opportunity comes up for us. And really, Steve, to help all of us rally around a plan so we can better compete against Southern California, Chicago, and places like that for their little precious federal fund that might come out of MAP 22. And also, this is also a part of course, the Lincoln Housing, Transportation, and Economic Development, but also cleaning the air as well. So I think that hopefully you can isolate that as a bullet of its own so that we can focus around that. We have the folks from the Port of Oakland here today that are beginning to address the port infrastructure, but I think it's more than just port infrastructure. We have significant freight goods movement infrastructure in the Bay Area, and we can't forget that. As much as, you know, we talk about transit infrastructure and roadway infrastructure, but our goods movement infrastructure is as important.
Yeah, I think that's, I'll just say it mildly, I think that's absolutely fair criticism. And we just had our hands full with putting these two plans together, and that's one thing we put up in the chair, so we need to do better next time.
Very good. Daryl?
A couple things. I want to agree with two of the speakers, Grace and Art. We're a county that's on the edge of the region, so we border San Joaquin and Sacramento, so I want to echo in Grace's question that that's really important. And like I've seen Steve and Ezra's presentations, we're really part of a big mega region. So our economies are very interrelated with Sacramento and other areas. So that's very important. I agree with Art's comment. We have, you know, we are an economic, there is competition out there. And we saw that TCIF, Los Angeles has their act together, trade quarter stuff. So I think it's very important. I also want to acknowledge, I think my colleagues would agree with me, both your staffs, and we said this to your commissions, but and I think our individual counties, is you guys did a lot of listening too. And that's hard because this was a big shift. I think some of us were uncomfortable. Our cities were definitely uncomfortable. The timing probably couldn't have been worse with the loss of redevelopment, and they felt like they were under assault from the state, and you're trying to implement a state mandate with 375. So the timing wasn't ideal. And I think I want to credit Steve and Ezra and his staff. They came out to our county a number of times. I know it went out to a lot of folks. There were some contentious meetings. I think it's interesting around this table. It's actually pretty quiet today, which my sense is when you do a good plan, it's like a little bit like being a referee, right? They don't really notice you. All of a sudden, it's quiet, and you kind of move on to the next step. And it sounds like we're getting to that point. There may be one more round when it goes to your commission. But at least with the partnership, we understand what this is about. We all probably would like a little bit more out of it, but I think it's a good spot. And then there's some more we can work on. So.
Thanks, Daryl. Anyone else on this item? Okay, we'll move on to the next one. Is that Carolyn Ann Ross?
Yeah, I'll provide a quick update. This will probably not make this any more lively, but the air quality conformity analysis went out for review on March 29th, as long as the 2013 TIP. Both of those two public comment periods closed on May 3rd. We did not receive any comments on the air quality conformity analysis. That just evaluates if the region in 2040 meets the emissions targets were given for the different primarily criteria pollutants as well as particulate matter emissions. We passed all of those tests in the conformity analysis. In terms of the 2013 TIP, I believe all of your programming folks know that as of June 3rd of this year, our current transportation plan, Transportation 2035, will expire, and we will be in a conformity lapse grace period. So the last TIP amendment is going in May. We will, as soon as the 2013 TIP is approved and the plan is approved, it typically takes about 3 months for the feds to approve that, and that is when we will be free and clear to move forward with those next documents. I think it's important to note that any delay in approval of the plan or the 2013 TIP will extend how long we're in that conformity lapse grace period. And during that period, projects that are in the 2011 TIP can move forward, but there can be no changes. That is consistent for exempt and non-exempt projects. So hopefully all of your changes that you needed are in for the May TIP amendment. And if we have any delays in approval, we will definitely be in touch with your staffs in terms of the schedule implications for the 2013 TIP going into effect.
Is that it?
Yep.
Ross is off the hook. So
he's here for questions.
Just questions.
If I could just emphasize 2 points. The first, this question of delay will be before our joint planning committees on Friday. We have received requests from both individuals and agencies for an extended comment period. We are recommending to our committees that they reject that, but committees do what committees do. And I think you do need to be prepared. If there is a delay, it will have consequences both for the TIP and for the RENA process, which really sort of has a hard stop to it, unlike the plan where you can go long, but you just pay consequences for doing so. So that's thing number one. If you have an interest in that question, you might want to have some people there on Friday to say so. Secondly, I don't know how to handicap our litigation exposure here. There have been three of these plans done, and one of them has been sued. We've had all kinds of threats and noise and commotion about that, and we won't know until I think we're done with the process and we certify the EIR. But I think it's certainly higher than usual, let me put it that way. So I just don't want us to be lulled by the boredom of this meeting into thinking that this is a uncontroversial, low-profile plan. It is, to my mind, mystifyingly controversial in some ways. But it is certainly, we used to in the past have to drag people to public hearings to come talk about this plan, and now we've got to beat them with a stick to get them away. So I just want you to be prepared for some post-event action.
Art? Steve, on that note, I just want to, you know, if you're going to pursue CEQA reform legislation, I suggest that you exempt future RTP from programmatic EIR process.
Well, the only problem with that is that this plan actually does confer CEQA benefits if you go through an EIR at this level, so you'd have to throw the good out with the bad that way.
Anyone else on that? So let's... Oh, so Suzanne, go ahead.
This is maybe a little bit of minutia, but didn't the plan adoption originally, the schedule happen in June? And now it's July?
Well, it was even earlier than that originally.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, I don't mean originally. I mean more recently.
Yeah. Okay. We pushed it a month. We've been pushing it every milestone along the way, and we've just run out of rope now.
But
so
my question isn't about more time. I mean, that's not an issue. Diane Steinhauser couldn't be here today. She wanted me to represent her, which I thought was ironic. I'd be happy to talk about RENA housing allocation in Marin County and what they should have.
You'd like to switch places, wouldn't you?
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Just for giggles.
That's why her county's in fire, right?
But they may send a letter. But my question actually was more related to quorum issues. Are you don't envision any problems with the switch from June to July?
No. I think we'll be okay. We're going to rent like... the ballpark somewhere to have the meeting. I think the problem is if we don't make July. Typically, our boards don't meet in August. Now they could. But I think July is when we have to try to hold the line.
Well, so, Steve, let's say we make July. What's going to happen after that? I mean, Ken touched on some of the advocacy
and other things, but it
seems like after you get back from Disney World, what happens?
I think the federal approvals should be fairly routine, although now that I've said that, they'll do something. I think the major question is whether there will be litigation, and we'll know that 30 days after we certify the EIR. There may be other theories out there to try to disrupt the plan, but... You know, we've been through quite a few of these, and that tends to be the way it happens. I think, Ezra, you mentioned that if there's any commotion with RENA, it would really be targeted at HCD in Sacramento, not at you.
Well, I think it might be targeted at both of us, but HCD does have the authority to change RENA allocations. They've never done that, and they don't want to. But if someone found that there was something unlawful about those allocations, that would be the appropriate remedy.
Well, it's 2:00. I guess you're out of material. Is that the everybody's fishing around for an issue?
We could start all over again and do it right again.
So I just wanted to say that I think the reason it's so quiet is because of all the work that's been done the past 2 years, and I just want to acknowledge the work of the MTC staff and ABAG. As I read the plan, every chapter seemed like it was a chapter in our lives that we had gone through the issue, we had resolved the issue, it was settled, and so really what's in the plan shows all the work that we've done in terms of communicating along the way, not only with the advocates, but I think you did a fantastic job communicating with the CMAs. And there were many, many meetings with the ROG, the PTAC, the CMA directors, the CMA planning directors. So I think, you know, everything's kind of lined up, and that's why you're not hearing a lot of controversy from us. And it's because of the good work you've done in communicating with us. We really appreciate it this time around.
You know, if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind just... raising a question. We don't necessarily need to talk about it now, but just for all of you to be thinking about it. And we can joke about the fact that this group hasn't met in several years, but that is a serious issue. I think my impression is that over time, this group lost some momentum too. And over time, the CMAs have a very regular and robust process that they vet issues and engage in discussions. And the transit general managers I know have had some particular items of work that they've worked with us on, like the transit sustainability project, like Clipper. But what we have lost in doing that work separately is we have lost this chance for the two groups, and that's not all who's here, but those are the two main power blocks. We've lost the chance for them to interact and conflict and just have engagement. So to the extent you think that is a bad thing, we maybe ought to talk about trying to put Humpty Dumpty back together a little bit. To the extent you don't care or you enjoy not meeting so often, or you know, John Risto doesn't like chairing meetings. Then
once every 3 years.
I don't think we've got a broken process by any means. I think we're getting a lot of business done. But this outfit, for those of you who don't remember, was created after ICE-T passed as a forum for trying to figure out how to spend flexible money. That's really how we started. And I think it's done a lot of good work over the years. But in recent years, we've been doing that work outside of this forum, and I just didn't want to miss the chance to raise that question explicitly in case there's a different point of view.
Grace,
it looked like you had Kate, then Daryl, then Grace.
Well, I mean, just to that point, I think that there's a lot of topics coming up that would be suitable to be discussed at this group. Primarily cap and trade, I think, is something, especially if there's a regional program associated with that. So,
Daryl?
I think Grace, then myself. Go ahead, Grace.
I just want to say something I said to Steve when he got here. I've only been here a year and a half, and I come out of the Northwest with most of my training, and as a kid it was Portland during the growth management, the land use laws being put in place. As the regional transportation provider, we connect not always well, but we try and connect with the other transit properties here. But I'm a firm believer in the land use plan. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? The plan comes first, and then transit and transportation should serve that land use plan, because it should be, in its best form, an agreement among a region and a local government as to what's going to happen where. And then we're the functionaries that make it happen. So if you're all about the port, or you're all about tourism, or you're all about whatever, of course the Bay Area is very complex and it's got all of the above. But I think knowing what the game plan is, by sticking together, we can take those hard votes in terms of, I don't really know what to say no to at this point. I've been making it up as I go, but I did start with the land use plan. When I got here, I asked, what's the game plan? What's the master we're supposed to serve? And that's why the edges is an important piece. I noticed, BART's the most underfunded in terms of total dollars proportionately. I don't know who's the most underfunded in terms of infrastructure, but we've put a budget together that was really oriented. We've taken out of our hide, I think we're going to hit $50 million here soon, out of the operating budget to put in the capital budget. BART's a different animal than the rest of these, but largely to be able to get the BART Metro piece in order, we've got to replace the guts of the system. So an ongoing conversation I need to have as an agency is, what are the plans of the areas? And then that issue of the tax increment finance piece that was gone, and the redevelopment agents, it's a critical piece. I believe in one of your charts, and we try and put it in our material, it says 25% of the region's housing and jobs are supposed to be within a half mile of the BART stations. That puts an awful lot on us to make land use happen, and it won't happen by itself, and it puts a lot on us to carry folks. And so that capacity expansion piece and replace the guts of the system is all on us now. And in order to prioritize our investments, we need that that connection with what the game plan is, so that we're using our resources more wisely, so the more We understand what your growth expectations are. We can put to you the conflicts that are in place and see if we can get answers. But I will tell you, coming from the outside, the first one I came across was Livermore, and there's so many contradictory policies in place on Livermore and so many decisions that have been made, in my opinion, in a, you know, what's the knee-jerk reaction for this two-year period or four-year period, and you, people have succumbed to the temptation, whatever it was in front of it, and the way to combat that, which I totally get. I mean, I totally get political forces on you, but the way you sustain and work against those political forces is to have a game plan that's agreed on by so many people that you have the collective guts to say no to something. And it's that test, what you're willing to say no to, that is the real test of planning, in my opinion, where you've got a developer coming in with their money dripping out of their pockets, or a county commissioner, or here a supervisor that wants to do something, and you've got to be able, or a board, and you've got to be able to say, yeah, that's a great idea in the short run, but not in the long run, and we need to reshape that slightly, maybe not say no absolutely, but the importance of this is really critical to us, and I think we're really critical to the Bay Area's success, and we want to be, and we want to link to you, not be an island unto ourselves. So I really, the importance of this I can't underestimate, and I asked for some of this stuff when I got here, and I got some of the answer out of this, but there's some really tough questions that I don't feel a backbone on, and I'd like to work on that backbone with everybody here.
Sounds like one vote to continue the partnership. So Daryl and then Maria.
I concur. I think it's I don't know how frequently we need to meet, but I think whenever we're talking about big regional policy issues, cap and trade is one example, things that are new, how it affects people, it's the one place where the CMAs can hear what the transit operators are thinking. Instead, we kind of hear about it, we see it on an agenda, or maybe some of our staffs go. And we're a county that doesn't have the big operator in our county. It's a little different. But, you know, for example, our bus systems all feed Grace's system. So we're very interrelated, and I think it's helpful. I think maybe what we could talk about is what are some work topics that this group should be focusing on. What's going to happen after this plan? So this group worked on this plan, different arenas, which was good. And also I think the other dynamic is now the JPC has a bigger role. So the whole issue of air quality and climate change and all those other issues, they're not going away. And so how does that impact us, and how does transportation respond to those and get out ahead of it, I think would be helpful.
Maria.
I'll nominate Grace for vice chair if we need one. just wanted to compliment again the staff of ABAG and MTCB. It's been fantastic, but also to recognize the local agency staff. Like, we have never worked so closely with our planning department and all of the other stakeholders, and I know that's the case around the region. This really helped bring us all together. One thing that popped out of me in my 10th hearing of this presentation was that in this case, even the no project scenario, every single one of those scenarios is counting on a substantial amount of revenues we're assuming we're going to have that we aren't necessarily going to have. So I really feel it's incumbent on us as a region to all get on one page and start advocating for those new revenues just to implement the plan we have. I think this is a place where we've got a lot to learn by looking down south, as I think it was either Art or Daryl mentioned. They have their act together. They were very cohesive in lobbying for MAP 21. They are sitting there identifying their next generation of capital projects and revenue sources, and as a region, all are on the same page and getting those grant ready and new revenue source ready. And that's something I think this group could really work on.
Looks like Art wants to say something. I can tell just by looking at him.
I just want to second Maria's motion to have Grace be the vice chair of this body.
She will have to arm wrestle Randy Iwasaki for that one. But I'm sure there's a line of succession that can start immediately on this.
You know, it does strike me that, as Grace said, this really is the first time in my memory that we've had the horse in front of the cart, you know, and I forget which one is which. But the land use plan and the transportation plan, I think, are really in sync now going forward. And remember, though, that it's a two-way street, and it's a feedback loop. And a lot of the transit investment that we are making is supporting this land use strategy, but that strategy is going to do things to the transit systems. You know, it's going to make Muni even more crowded than it is. It's going to make BART more crowded than it is. It's going to make some systems that aren't crowded today crowded. And I think we're going to have less of this sort of empty bus problem that historically has confronted the Bay Area, and more of this, you know, where is my seat problem? And that is a new challenge, I think, for a lot of our major transit systems. Caltrain, I know, is having that challenge today as well. And the CMAs under this plan, I think, as Daryl said candidly, are being pushed into a territory that I think a couple of years ago they weren't all that sure they wanted to go to. But I don't know who else to have do it, which is to have some kind of mediating forum in between this regional policy and local land use control. And that's OBAG, and that's going to be probably more of stuff like that in the next plan. So it does strike me that we've got some change for all three of the major power blocks, as I called them, that are involved in this partnership. And change is always a time to look at doing things differently.
I do want to add, though, that the 580 corridor problem that's been raised does not appear to have any land use solution. It's either going to, because of the topography of the Bay Area and how it shifts from one cultural domain to a completely different domain, which has a $400,000 price differential, but still has some very powerful employment centers that are proximate or reasonably proximate to an in-commute from the Central Valley. We could build housing all day, and it really wouldn't have an effect on that corridor. A decision will have to be made whether we want to economically integrate the Central Valley or try to keep it at bay. That's an interesting question. And I think if you're going to think about it from the perspective of a mega-regional economy, you would probably lean more towards integrating whatever you can with respect to the resources and the labor force and the cost of the labor force into the natural growth of the Bay Area economy. Well, that would call for a much stronger transportation linkage through a rail system, since we can't afford to bring in, you know, that many more cars onto an existing saturated system. So that's an important topic that I think should be studied. It affects our goods movement dramatically. We see a lot of shift of industrial production low-level industrial production and distribution out to the Central Valley. That's all trucking back in. It's taking up a lot of capacity. And we don't have nearly enough rail capacity coming in or going out for the port. In addition, that whole line is first up for sea level rise problems for flooding. And so that's another important aspect to our economy, where we have an infrastructure that surrounds the bay, which is a coastal city with very little separation between its current shoreline and, you know, very heavy infrastructure. We do not have even an understanding of what we have in flood control protection facilities, not to mention what we would need to do. So we're behind, I think, in terms of that level of planning. We're mentioning it here, and I think I would like to introduce this interregional component somewhere in the plan so we don't lose it again, along with goods movement. But I think there's a lot of work to be done in terms of the specific problems that are going to be identified through the process of the hazard mitigation and the interregional trips.
Larry?
Just quickly, I'm one of the public works directors that I think was invited later to the party here. And in many cases, I think some of the issues that have concerned us may seem narrow. A lot of what we talk about when we're participating here is about the fix it first, and particularly for the local streets and roads. But when you look at the funding charts, we're not an insignificant factor in terms of how this plan really gets put together. And I think one of the reasons I think it's important that we continue as a group to meet is that I think as we go through the implementation of the plan, and in particular as we implement the PDA strategies and the transportation funding portion, that I really do expect to find some unexpected consequences of our implementation through the One Bay Area grant in particular. And I think it'll be nice to have that conversation here where we're all trying to meet our needs out of the same size pie, and that I think having some feedback as we go forward about how it's working and what we see at the local level will be valuable input.
Thanks. Anyone else? So, Steve and Ezra, thanks a lot for, I think, a job well done to this point. I think there probably is going to be some difficult steps ahead. Sounds like to me that there certainly is a reason to continue the partnership for a number of reasons that I heard. Some big picture planning things that are still out there. I think Marie is right about the part that for this policy to move to implementation, we've got a big resource problem. And for us to get on the same page with resources and where they need to go, it needs a strategy. And I think that's the feedback loop of how well we do with this is how we can convince the public that those resources are needed. So my guess is we probably do need to continue the partnership, and I will gladly turn this over to Randy and Grace when they're ready. But maybe 3 years is a little bit too long to wait around for these meetings, so maybe there would be one to make sense that after the plan is adopted, we put a short list of what are the real key one, two, or three implementation issues that we really need to work on for turning policy into practice and implementation, and that might be the next steps for this group. With that, did you have any closing remarks, Ezra or Steve? Otherwise, we are adjourned. Thanks.